This is Kathy coming to you with the News Gazette for Monday, the 12th of May, which also includes some information from Sunday. Starting with the biggest headline on the front page, it says Shifting Focus. And this has to do with the retiring Major Tammy Fruling Voges at the new mural. Dave Hinton, dropping names. St. Joseph leader said it's time to step down. Tammy Fruling Voges figured 2 decades of public service to her hometown of St. Joseph is enough. After 20 years of serving the community, I just felt it was time for someone else to take their turn, she said. I had always said as I started serving as trustee and then as mayor, or village president, people would ask, how long are you going to do it? I always answered, as long as I have the passion. Fruling Voges opted not to seek re-election. James Page will be sworn in on Tuesday as her successor. The outgoing village leader, 66, says it's time for someone new to take over, to maybe give some new ideas in the town of 3,800 people. The last couple of years, it seemed like it was getting harder, Fruling Voges said. Social media doesn't help when you have served in different roles. She recommended avoiding social media because it can change what you think about people, people I respected. Appointed trustee in November of 2004, she was elected to seat the following year and re-elected. She later served 2 terms as the village president. She never had an agenda when she took office as a trustee, she said. My goal was always serving the community because I loved my community and I wanted to do my part for making sure that St. Joseph would always thrive and be a great place to live. Fruling Voges said she believes former longtime village president B.J. Hackler had Fruling Voges in mind as a future village president before I thought I would want to be. He made me his mayor pro tem, and when the time came, I felt prepared when I was mayor. One of the first projects Fruling Voges was assigned was to see that large sports complex east of town would be developed. It was a little intimidating, of course, she said, noting that she got in contact with the former trustee who was in charge of that development, Pete Moss, after he took a new job in Texas. The first phase included 3 softball diamonds, a basketball court, youth football field, playground, and large concession stand. The community festival is also now held there after it outgrew Cold Park and downtown. One of my goals as mayor and earlier as trustee, I think it's important to have different activities downtown, Fruling Voges just said. Working with our chamber, one of the things I've started was we have tried to do a couple of summer events downtown. The village also started having its own downtown Christmas tree at the request of a young lady with the festival. Another thing I started to bring downtown in the fall, I would do a fall costume parade with our kids. We would meet at the village hall and all the businesses that wanted to participate could do so. Some participants came in costume, others just gave out candy. Fruling Voges dressed up her 2 wiener dogs, 1 year as bumblebees, another as ladybugs. It grew tremendously, she said. Last year we had to close at 40 kids walking. The kids always thought that was pretty fun to see what the wiener dogs were going to be dressed up as. Fruling Voges also looks back fondly at the opening of the portion of the Kickapoo rail trail connecting St. Joseph to Urbana. I love the trail, she said. It's a huge addition to the village. Over time, I could really see the town becoming a trail town. Fruling Voges said the downtown has become a hot spot for eating establishments. We have our restaurants, our winery downtown. Once we got our new village administrator, he's been working hard on the economic development. Now we have an economic development consultant. Last month, the village board approved its first tax increment financing district, which would also help with the economic development as well as possibly residential expansion. St. Joseph's last project came in 2009. Another goal was the hiring of a village administrator in 2021. Joseph Hackney serves in that position. I'm very pleased with this addition and it has been a huge improvement as far as how we manage the village, Fruling Voges said. Adding to the village accomplishments during her tenure was a village stormwater improvements. We made major improvements to the stormwater issues on Sherman and First Street, she said. The village is also nearing the end of an upgrade of its wastewater sewer system, a process that began in 2017 with a rate study. The village's water system is owned and operated by the Illinois American Water. Fruling Voges met her future husband, Mike, during her senior year of high school. They have 2 sons. law enforcement is a focus, that their household Mike is retired from Illinois State Police. Son August works as a dispatcher for Metcad, and son Mason is a Champaign police officer. Daughter-in-law Carrie, who is married to Mason, is superintendent at the Champaign County Correctional Facility. Over the last 20 years, I've had a variety of great teammates to make these things happen. Without their hard work and commitment to serve the residents of the village of St. Joe, we would have never been able to move forward with any of these accomplishments, Fruling Voges said. With more free time, Fruling Voges said she plans to focus on family and enjoying a little traveling, probably a few mini trips. She will also focus on projects with their 100-year-old home, her flower garden, and three rental homes that they own. Parkland students earn Jones scholarships. Five Parkland College students were awarded scholarships on the 22nd Annual David M. Jones Persuasive Speech Contest on May 1st. The speech contest allowed 18 Parkland students to showcase their public speaking skills, advocate causes close to their hearts, and give back to the charities they represented. Contest participants have all completed a communication course at Parkland. Joseph Rutledge of Mahomet won first place and a $500 scholarship for his speech in support of Habitat for Humanity. The nonprofit will also receive a $500 donation from Parkland's communication program faculty. I gained confidence in my public speaking ability from participating in the contest, Rutledge said. I also gained the realization that I can achieve great things if I put my mind to them. Other scholarship award winners: Trinity Shales of Chicago, second place, $250 scholarship, advocating for the American Fibromyalgia Syndrome Association. Quinn Fisher of Champaign, third place, $100 scholarship, supporting St. Louis Children's Hospital. Pierce Thompson, Troy, Ohio, fourth place, $50 award, championing the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Brianna Niles, no hometown listed, 5th place, $50 award, speaking on behalf of the Center for Reproductive Rights. Urbana resident receives the Quilt of Valor. Larry Ingram, a resident of Urbana, was presented with the Quilt of Valor on Wednesday for his service in the U.S. Army. Ingram served in Vietnam during 1969-70. He was evacuated by helicopter and sustained injury in the process. His wife Rhonda, daughter Victoria Ingram, and granddaughter Peyton Parsons were present for the presentation. Elks present a check for the Penguin Project. The Champaign Elks number 2497 charity donations continue with the Penguin Project. The club recently presented a check for $10,000 to John Stuff, CU theater manager, for the Penguin Project play. Roger and Lisa Quinn, representing the Elks, presented the check. Established in 2004, the Penguin Project has evolved into a national program with chapter sites throughout the United States. The program provides a supportive environment for children with disabilities to explore their creative talents. Elks representative said it is amazing to go see the shows and the hard work done. Tull named Rantoul Club's top student. Noah Tull of Thomasboro has been named April Student of the Month by the Rantoul Exchange Club. The Rantoul Township High School senior ranks 20th in the class with a grade point average of 5.2. He is the son of Frank Thomas and Kathy Tull. Noah Tull's school activities have included basketball, cross-country, track and field, student council, National Honor Society, and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Honors and awards have included a certification of achievement from the University of Illinois, academic honors, excellence in social studies, excellence in honors anatomy and physiology, varsity letter awards, all conference and excellence in intermediate algebra. His civic and volunteer activities, National Honor Society such as helping with the Multicultural Club, Run for Your Life at St. Malachy, the Madrigals Dinner, prepping for FCA dinner, freshman orientation, helping with a blood drive, and with the girls' track meets. Tull worked in the University of Illinois Youth Employment Program during the summer of 2024 as a pre-apprentice for the steam distribution shop. He has also helped his grandparents with their cleaning business multiple times. Tull plans to attend college for a major in business field with a goal of becoming an entrepreneur. And this article was written by Dave Hinton, who is an editor of the News Gazette's Our Community section. This next article, from Urbana, Mayor set to announce plans to replace city administrator by Jana Wiersma. The city's new mayor has an idea of who his future right-hand man or woman may be. We'll be bringing that information to the public here soon, said Mayor Deshaun Williams, though he declined to name any specific candidates at this time. In the meantime, the City Council will vote today on the appointment of Human Resources and Finance Director, CFO, Elizabeth Hannon, as Interim City Administrator, following the departure of Carol Mitten, who vacated on May 3rd, according to city staff. If approved, Hannon's appointment would last until June 30th of 2026, or until the position is filled. Mitten was hired by former Mayor Diane Martin in 2018, which marked the first time Urbana had had city administrator since 2007. She was brought on to run day-to-day operations with the position, replacing the mayor's chief of staff. In addition to being Mitten's interim replacement, Hannon is also up for reappointment in her current role for a term ending on June 30, 2027. She joined the city as finance director in 2014 and was promoted to her current position in 2019, city staff said. The agenda for the City Council's meeting today includes several other reappointments, including that of Police Chief Larry D. Boone for a term ending June 30, 2027. Williams said that as he made decisions on reappointments, his hope was to create an opportunity to work with these employees under my direction to see what we're able to accomplish. Boone was appointed in 2023 for a term ending in June 30th of this year. When asked how he feels about Boone's performance over the past 2 years, Williams replied that he has done what he was brought here to do under the previous city administration. So I think as far as I'm concerned, this is just a new perspective, a new view, Williams said. The mayor added that he's made it clear to Boone and the community that his plan is to really touch the community and touch the streets together. I think that's going to play a vital role in curbing some of the fears and the issues that we've seen within the community, Williams said. So we're going to have a very community-focused approach, but that can only happen if we do that together and collaborate as we move forward. Also on the front page, the National Archery in the Schools Program Eastern National Tournament. The Maroons hit their target. Top-seeded Central delivers the national championship. Centennial becomes the first Illinois school with top 10 finishes in both formats from Louisville. Champaign's reputation as an archery hotbed received another boost this weekend. Champaign Central celebrated a once-in-a-lifetime achievement on Saturday, finishing first in Bullseye among 265 high school teams at the National Archery in the Schools Program National Tournament. Centennial, meanwhile, pulled off an impressive double, finishing in the top 10 in two team formats, becoming the first team from Illinois to do so. I'm extremely happy, finally reaching that pinnacle we've been going for the last several years, Central coach Jensen Brown said. Several Maroons turned in an impressive individual performance as well, including third place Alexia Mowry and fourth place finishers Riley Smalley and Pooja Jagarlamundi. The Maroons will celebrate their national title this week at school, Brown said, noting many team members had to return to Champaign immediately after the tournament due to exams today. The kids were excited and glad to get back home, he said. Centennial finished 8th in the Bullseye format, sparked by Jennifer Haynes, 10th place. The Chargers also competed in the 3D format and placed 3rd in the nation among 162 teams in the high school division. Ace Van was 16th and Haynes 21st. Centennial became the first Illinois team to place on the podium in the 3D format. The Chargers this year 3D state champions after first place finishes from senior Kalik Machado and freshman Rotem Amit finished 7th at the Nationals in 2024. The 3D format is extremely challenging for many archers due to the varying distances and target sizes, Centennial coach Ryan Miller said. These athletes have dedicated countless hours to compete at this level in both formats. Georgetown Ridge Farm and Armstrong Potomac also qualified and competed. Champaign Franklin, Jefferson, and the Next Generation competed in the middle school division. And there are pictures of the archery teams included in this article. And now the top of the morning. Something to get you going today, written by courtesy staff writer Joey Wright. Grabbing a Bite with Joey Wright. Each week we chop it up with the folks responsible for dishing up food around the area. What restaurant should we try next? Let Joey Wagner know. The old donut shop in Champaign has been a go-to destination for morning treats since 1956. That's in part because the local staple hasn't deviated from what its fans have come to expect. Our niche is just doing simpler, more traditional donuts that were always available when I was a kid, manager Rob Cooper said. We pride ourselves on working with all real and natural ingredients and just trying to keep to our traditions. Cooper credits a strong staff with helping the restaurant's successes over the years, and plenty of familiar faces have stopped by during its long history. We have a lot of regular customers that we just look out for them and set things aside, knowing that they're going to come by, Cooper said. It feels like a very personal mom-and-pop type of business, and I think people are happy to support those types of businesses. Ye Olde's donut offerings, including cake, sour cream, and yeast, are relatively straightforward as its operation. The restaurant doesn't take pre-orders through its website, though they welcome them by phone, via text, or through social media. But Cooper emphasizes a commitment to quality as an aspect that's helped Ye Olde stand apart from the rest of the pack. Quality is our highest priority, definitely, Cooper said, adding that arriving early is the best way to ensure fans' favorite donuts will be in stock. Another local news, information sought in $11,000 credit card fraud. Champaign County Crime Stoppers is seeking the public's help regarding a case of credit card fraud. On February 26, a set of stolen credit cards were used at Menards and Rural King in Champaign and at Walmart in Savoy. Surveillance footage showed a man using the cards to purchase numerous items, including riding lawnmowers, reaching a total value of over $11,000. Police are asking for the public's help identifying the suspect. He appeared to be a black male last seen wearing a tan winter hat, sunglasses, a dark blue zip-up hooded sweatshirt, blue jeans, and black sneakers, and was seen leaving the area in a white Dodge Ram van. If you have any information regarding this crime or any crime, please contact Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477. 373tips.com or the free P3 Tips mobile app. Tipsters are always 100% anonymous when contacting Crime Stoppers and receive a code number to check on rewards. All tips submitted to Crime Stoppers are electronically stripped of any personally identifying information and processed by a third-party answering service. Crime Stoppers will pay cash rewards of $5,000 for tips that lead to an arrest in any Champaign County homicide, $2,500 for tips leading to arrest of any felony involving a gun, and up to $1,000 for tips leading to arrests and other crimes. Police investigate possible murder-suicide in Danville by Dave Hinton. Danville police are investigating a possible murder-suicide in that city that happened late Friday afternoon. Officers responded to the area of the 200 block of Grace Street at 5:15 p.m. for a report of shots fired. Police located a 32-year-old Danville woman lying in the front yard of the residence with apparent gunshot wounds. The victim was transported to a local hospital where she was later pronounced deceased. Deputy Chief Joshua Webb said that witnesses told police they had heard the gunshots and then saw a man standing next to the victim while holding a handgun. The man then went into the residence and had not been seen since. Officers attempted to make contact with the suspect, but were unable to do so, Webb said. The Danville Police Emergency Response Unit responded to the scene and entered the residence, where they located a 60-year-old Danville man who was deceased with an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. According to the Vermilion County Coroner's Office, the victims will be identified pending notification of family. The Illinois State Police Crime Scene Unit and the Coroner's Office are assisting Danville Police in the investigation. Anyone with information on the incident is asked to call the Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or call the Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. In this article, headlined a grim forecast, Illinois weather enthusiasts alarmed at how federal cuts may endanger lives and diminish pursuit, by Adriana Perez. Melanie Snow and her husband talk about the weather like it's gossip, Every day they read the National Weather Service discussions, technical documents from the agency where meteorologists explain the reasoning and rationale behind forecasts from weather events in Chicago and across the country. We avidly consume those snow said, and we're definitely the people in our circle of friends who, if they really want to know the weather for their vacation, wedding, birthday party outside, etc., etc., they call us and say, give me the lowdown. The couple met in college at Georgia Tech, where they studied to become meteorologists. Then they didn't. She became a science educator and he became an actuary, but the weather bug stuck with them. Now, weather hobbyists and enthusiasts, some like Snow and her husband, who might prefer to watch storm clouds from the safety of their porch, and others who'd rather chase severe weather for the thrill, are feeling anxious about what federal funding and staffing cuts under the Trump administration could mean for the data they rely on daily from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Weather Service. A back and forth on staffing has put the agency, like many others, in a state of limbo. Thousands of probationary employees were fired in mid-February, ordered by a federal judge to be rehired a month later, and then put on administrative leave, only to see the U.S. Supreme Court block that rehire order last month. Staff shortages have also temporarily suspended and reduced weather balloon releases that track temperature, pressure, and wind speed in the Great Plains and Midwest. Between recent buyouts and mass firings, nearly half of the National Weather Service forecast offices had 20% of their vacancy rates as of April, and 8 of the 122 offices are missing more than 35% of their staff. A lot of people don't know what goes into making a daily weather report that they access on their app. There are thousands of NOAA and National Weather Service people who are launching weather balloons every day and analyzing that data, Snow said. Weather forecasting has come so far, especially in the last 20 years, and to see that decline because of underfunding and firing the people at these organizations is really only harmful to everyone, not just enthusiasts. While Snow and her husband avidly follow the weather forecasts, a hardy contingent of Illinois storm chasers endeavor to get up close and personal. They are concerned not only about a loss of information, but also safety, theirs and those in the path of destructive storms. There's a lot of chatter about what could happen, a lot of worry. We rely on an enormous amount of data that's put out by the federal government in order to do what we do, said Skip Talbot, a storm chaser from Springfield, and vice versa. Most storm chasers have a regular full-time job, said Talbot, who is a software developer but has traveled a 250,000 miles to document 150 tornadoes over the last 50 years, or last 20 years. We actually do try to make contributions to scientific research as much as we can, and it's really nice to be helpful out there. Make your passion useful, he said. Growing up in Oak Brook, Talbot's fascination was sparked by the strongest August tornado on record in the United States, which occurred in nearby Plainfield in 1990. The tornado, unusual and violent, took the lives of 29 people, injured 350, and caused an estimated $160 million in damages. In college, Talbot took some meteorology courses and received training in spotting and reporting hazards. The Weather Service relies on storm chasers to be their eyes out in the field, he said, as they can't see everything with radar. On the ground, chasers also use information from the agency. They have a lot of tools that we don't have on the road, Talbot said. For instance, official tornado warnings can help chasers decide where to go when they're already out. If there aren't enough meteorologists to work every storm, then we're not going to get that kind of heads up. Likewise, we see a lot of stuff when we're chasing that the Weather Service just doesn't know about, he said. Weather Service offices don't often have the bandwidth to track down every weather hazard, Talbot said. He has experienced this firsthand when he reports a tornado and the local office is too busy or understaffed to investigate. If there's less staff, he said, nothing will happen with that. So the log will be incorrect. There'll be errors in the storm data. We're already seeing some of that. Sometimes the Weather Service, and I don't blame them, don't have the time to put out all of these minute details about what happened in these storms. They have to issue the day's forecast and move on. Storm chasers and the public would be at risk if the Weather Service offers fewer frequent updates and safety warnings. The same could happen if there are limits on public access to NOAA's high-resolution radar system that detects and analyzes weather as well as its satellite data on temperature, moisture, cloud cover, and more. Some worry about more than limited accessibility to real-time data. Many storm chasers are frantically trying to download and compile archive radar data from past events that they rely on for their own research projects. As extreme weather events intensify because of climate change from human greenhouse gas emissions, past and current data will only become more critical. And it's from the pharmaceutical industry. Trump promises to order U.S. pay-only price other nations do for some drugs, by Will Weitzert and Amanda Seitz. President Donald Trump says he'll sign an executive order today that, if implemented, could bring down the costs of some medications, reviving a failed effort from his first term on an issue he's talked up ever since becoming president. The order Trump is promising will direct the Department of Health and Human Services to tie what Medicare pays for medications administered in a doctor's office to the lowest price paid by other countries. I will be instituting a most favored nations policy whereby the United States will pay the same price as the nation that pays the lowest price anywhere in the world. The president posted Sunday on his social media site, pledging to sign the order this morning at the White House. Our country will finally be treated fairly, and our citizens' health care costs will be reduced by numbers never even thought of before, Trump added. His proposal would likely only impact certain drugs covered by Medicare and given in an office. Think infusions that treat cancer and other injectables. But it could potentially bring significant savings to the government, although the trillions of dollars Trump boasted about in his post may be an exaggeration. Medicare provides health insurance for roughly $70 million older Americans. Complaints about U.S. drug prices being notoriously high, even when compared with other large and wealthy countries, have long drawn the ire of both parties, but a lasting fix has never cleared Congress. Under the planned order, the federal government would tie what it pays pharmaceutical companies for those drugs to the price paid by a group of other economically advanced countries, the so-called most favored nation approach. In this article, Hamas agrees to release the last living U.S. hostage in Gaza. Hamas said Sunday that the last living American hostage in Gaza, Eden Alexander, will be released as part of efforts to establish a ceasefire, reopen crossings into the Israeli blockaded territory, and resume the delivery of aid. Two Hamas officials told the Associated Press they expect the release in the next 48 hours. U.S. President Donald Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, confirmed late Sunday in a message to AP that Hamas had agreed to release Alexander as a goodwill gesture toward Trump. The announcement of the first hostage release since Israel shattered a ceasefire in March comes shortly before Trump visits the Middle East this week. It highlighted the willingness of Israel's closest ally to inject momentum into ceasefire talks for the 19-month war, as desperation grows among hostages' families and the Gaza's over 2 million people under the new Israeli blockade. This is a step taken in good faith toward the United States and the efforts of the mediators, Qatar and Egypt, to put an end to this very brutal war and return all living hostages and remains to their loved ones, Trump said on his social media platform, Truth Social, on Sunday evening. Hopefully, this is the first of those final steps necessary to end this brutal conflict. I look very much forward to that day of celebration. Alexander is an Israeli-American soldier who grew up in New Jersey. He was abducted from his base during the October 7, 2023 Hamas-led attack that ignited the war in Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office said the U.S. informed it of Hamas's intent to release Alexander without compensation or conditions, and that the step is expected to lead to negotiations on a truce. Netanyahu's government was angered by U.S. direct talks with Hamas earlier this year, which led to Hamas' offer to release Alexander and the bodies of four other hostages if Israel recommitted to a stalled ceasefire deal. Days later, however, Israel resumed the war. Witkoff told AP that Hamas's goal in releasing Alexander was to restart talks on a ceasefire, the release of additional hostages, and the surge of humanitarian aid into Gaza before Israel carries out a threatened total takeover of the territory. Khalil Ahaya, a Hamas leader in Gaza, said the group has been in contact with the U.S. administration over the past few days. And that's all we have time for on this first half, but I will be back in 2 minutes with the second half of the News Gazette for today, which is May the 12th.